Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
And we are thrilled to be joined in studio by the lead singer and creator of Lawrence the Band, Clyde Lawrence. You're playing at House of Blues tonight, an incredible venue. You're touring North America. You've blown up on social media. You're all young, in your 20s. Have you been at all surprised by the amount of success and like what's happening to you right now?
I mean, we're super grateful to have not only a really sizable, but like a really passionate fan base. Like, our fans are so awesome and really make us feel like we are like their favorite band. And so it's definitely, I don't know if surprising is the right word, but certainly something that I'm incredibly grateful for. And it's been really gradual. There wasn't like one moment, even though right now we're absolutely like having a moment where that video you played before is like blowing up on social media and all this fun stuff is happening. It's been a really gradual kind of like grassroots thing. Where, you know, we've played in Chicago four or five times now, and each time it's just like one venue's a little bigger than the next.
Oh, my friends and neighbors, welcome to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. You guys sound amazing. Lewis, you guys always sound fantastic. You sound particularly energized tonight. Tell me who we have sitting with the band tonight, please.
Oh, my God, sweeping the world of music, we've got the incredible Clyde and Gracie from the band Lawrence.
Thank you guys for having
me. Thank you guys. Thanks, you sound amazing. Thanks for being here.
I give a lot of credit to Gracie and the rest of the band for like helping me create this environment where we're all comfortable having the lines between family and friends and work just get so crossed in ways that can definitely get interesting. But at the end of the day, it's also really rewarding because after you play a great show, you're able to celebrate that with the people that are your best friends and they're also your collaborators and coworkers.
Clyde Lawrence of Lawrence the Band.
Thanks for having me.
Oh my God!
I know him.
One, two, three.
And here we go, Tony.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Was very cool to see Lawrence the Band. My hot guys, I saw that reaction as soon as I started talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's that game knob?
You guys did not like how I sounded. Oh, my goodness. Man, it's not good. It's normally how my wife looks when I start talking. There was just any better? Better? Worse?
Yeah, that was
I don't
just
know,
mild
yell.
Distortion.
See what happens.
Okay. We good? Hello?
Yeah, it everybody? Sounds better.
Okay, great. Nice way to start. A little turbulence on takeoff. It was very cool to see Lawrence the Band last night on Stephen Colbert's late night show. It was, if Shane could pick stocks like that, man, we'd all be retired. He hipped us to that band early, and they are now huge. Very, very, very cool, Shane. Did you enjoy that last night?
Yeah, it was great. Great to see what used to just be a band that I followed, now a couple friends, just playing music with Stephen Colbert's band. Very cool to see.
That is totally the way it feels when you pick a band early. It's like, and the musical stock exchange is a good idea. It's probably out there existing. Used to be radio programmers before the whole thing was rigged. except here at Odyssey.
And then, as we know, like, Clyde's a big Mets fan. He talked a lot about that when he was on with you guys. So I sent him Tanny's open this morning, and he's one line, wow, that's so cool. And then immediately, so how about that Mets-Braves series this weekend, huh?
Yeah.
So that's where his priorities are.
Yeah. Oh, here's my opening to say that Eduardo Escobar has 24 RBIs in September. Drove in all 5 runs for the Mets last night. Aren't you glad that came up?
That is beat the streak knowledge.
It really is. So just to recap, Lawrence the Band is those guys. They're Lawrence the Band. Lawrence the Host is our guy. Lawrence the Brand is everything that Lawrence, our guy, the host, does. Lawrence the Town is in Kansas, where Wilt Chamberlain and Danny Manning are from, right? Am I missing any Lawrence's?
Well, Lawrence Steph the Street up by me. Got Lawrence the Street and Uptown.
I've had to get off at Lawrence the Street like every day because of all this construction. Yeah. I can't even get to my exit.
Yeah, Lawrence the Street.
This Peterson Bridge construction is killing me slowly. It is just eroding whatever bit of my soul exists. It's traffic all the time. 2 p.m. on a Saturday.
Down in the South Loop, we have Lawrence the Fisheries.
Oh, yeah, we do.
If you want some fried shrimp.
I've driven by it a million times. I've never gone in.
So good.
Is it really?
Yeah, fun fact. I was in line at Lawrence Fisheries when I found out my apartment on Pilsen caught on fire.
Oh, that is a fun fact.
That's a good piece of Shane trivia.
I've never ridden a motorcycle faster.
You know, Shane said Lawrence Fisheries. Say Lawrence the Fisheries, or else I don't understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, Lawrence the Fisheries. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That article is very important.
Have you been to Lawrence, Kansas? Speaks, by the way.
I have not been to Lawrence, Kansas. It came into my consciousness when I was a kid, and Danny Manning was like the biggest basketball recruit in the universe, and I was a junkie for that stuff at the time. And then when Larry Brown hired his dad, Ed Manning, I was like, oh, this is how you do it, huh? You know, yeah. It taught me the ways of the world at that point.
Great college town. Just so much fun. Everything revolves around the university. Like, you're just driving in the middle of nothingness, and then this, like, liberal college town metropolis pops up where everyone's, like, fun and happy and cheap, and then you drive 5 miles outside of it, and it's the middle of Kansas again, and it's absolutely miserable. It's got some real Madison vibes to it.
It's funny. I was thinking about Madison as you said that, because the guy who tweeted at us today and basically invited us to Illinois and Wisconsin at Camp Randall on Saturday, I'm ashamed that I have not been to Camp Randall and jumped around.
Such a good time, man.
I have not jumped around for a Wisconsin football game. I need to do that this year.
The day that Pedro threw Don Zimmer to the ground, I watched that in a Madison bar before going to Wisconsin, Ohio State.
Is that a baseball memory, Danny? You hear that, Speaks?
Yeah.
That was like a calendar defined by a baseball happening. That was beautiful. And we started out with like rock and roll thoughts. I mean, my God, what a day.
What a show. What a show. How about this for a thought?
Yeah.
I know we might have a show tomorrow. We might not. But we could, the next time we do a full show, it'll be Monday. The Bears could be a very pathetic 3-1. Like, has that crossed anyone else's minds that it is very, very within the realm of possibility? The NFL is so weird every year, and all of these teams are so close, and there is so much parity, and there's fumble luck, and there's injury luck, and there's schedule luck, and it's not who you play, but when you play them. But, like, this year, if Cleveland beats Atlanta, which they're expected to do, the Deshaun Watson-less, Jacoby Brissett-led Cleveland Browns will be 3-1. Either the Justin Fields-led or Daniel Jones-led New York Giants will be 3-1. And if the Broncos, with Nathaniel Hackett, who is a coach who apparently looks like he's never played a single game of Madden in his life, if they beat a winless Vegas Raiders team, they will be 3-1. So, like, the team that we mocked the most, the Broncos, the team that is in the most scandal, the Browns, and either the Bears or the Giants will basically be 25% of the way through the season, a little bit less because now it's 17 games, at 3-1. It's a crazy league, man.
It is a crazy league. We've been there before. We've been further along. As you were talking, Danny, I thought of it. So Googled to get the particulars of when the Bears were 5-1 under Matt Nagy in 2020. And we all knew it was a sham 5-1 at the time. They were 28th in offense.
Right.
They were 28th in rushing because he never did it. They were 27th in scoring at the time. So we've lived that before as a version of our football reality.
Very recently.
Is that? Right, very, very recently. Why is this league that way? Because it's so matchup dependent and it's so week to week in that way.
I think there's 100 reasons. I mean, the league is designed for parity. It right? There's a salary cap. There's a salary floor.
The draft order matters.
The draft order matters significantly.
Yeah.
There's a very small number of games. And injuries are huge, and obviously they're all pros, right? It's not like college football. It's not like college basketball where there can be a huge talent discrepancy. Like whoever you think the best team in the NFL is right now, Bills, Packer, like whoever you say the number one team is.
I still think it's the Bills. The fact that they ran 40 more plays than the Dolphins and lost that game.
They ran 90 offensive plays. I love the Bengals tonight, by the way. I love the Bengals -3 tonight.
Well, it makes all the sense in the world, really. I have lots of thoughts on that game, but keep going. Keep going.
So salary cap, salary floor.
Yeah.
Only a 17-game sample, so compared to our other professional sports, just wide degree of variance, right? One win or one loss matters a lot more or a lot less than anything else. The highest rate of injury, so weird things can happen if key players are out. So like schedule luck comes into play, right? Like if you play, if you got the Chargers. And Justin Herbert, you got the Chargers early in the season when everybody's hurt. Mm-hmm. But then at the end of the season, if Justin Herbert's healthy and Keenan Allen's back and J.C. Jackson's back and, you know, Bosa's back, all of a sudden you're like, oh, Chargers are a much better team. So, like, the injury luck matters. There's just there's 100 reasons. That's why half the damn playoff field turns over every year. So yeah, the Bears or Giants are going to be 3-1. One of them is going to be 3-1 on Monday, and no one in either city, New York or Chicago, will think that they can win their division. Forget win the Super Bowl. Like no one in either city will think they can win their division, and they'll start 3-1.
This
crazy.
Is why it's part of why it drives the industry, because there's hope, there's false hope. There's things to dissect along.
That's not even mentioning Jacksonville, by the way.
Of it,
yeah. Like Jacksonville, arguably the most dysfunctional team in the NFL last year, mm-hmm. with all of the Urban Meyer stuff. Now they're a fairly significant underdog this weekend, 6.5 points to Philly, who looks like maybe the best team in the NFC. But if Trevor Lawrence is turning the corner right before our eyes, and he's looked amazing, two of the three games, the last two this year. If Jacksonville pulls off a 6.5 point upset, which happens every week in the NFL, Jacksonville's 3-1. And Doug Peterson's the favorite for coach of the year. And all of a sudden we'll be talking about Trevor Lawrence as a potential top 10 quarterback. And we'll be talking about them for having a shot to win the AFC South when, as of now, they're tied with the Titans for basically the third longest odds in the division. So like they'll go from third to win the division to first to win the division, one game. It's great. You're right. It's what drives the drama of the league, the randomness of the whole thing.
Yeah, the randomness of it, the hope, the false hope, and the conversational angles that are available during the week. This one tonight, man, Miami and Cincy, and I know we're going to play some Luke Getsy on Justin Fields in the offense for the Bears, and I'm looking forward to it. But this one tonight, I'm excited about watching this one. I hope we get a good version of the Dolphins, but it's a big ask. I mean, your pick makes all the sense in the world. Dolphins had to practice in Cincinnati this week at the college, right, at Nippert. So is that the UC stadium? I think it is.
Yeah.
They've had to practice there because they left Florida early because of the hurricane So it's asking a lot. You've got a short week after Tua was clearly hurt. They say a back. They say the concussion was not the issue. But, man, Mike McDaniel. I'm falling for Mike McDaniel in the way that you have fallen for Brandon Staley. And I'm getting lots of info on it because my big bro is a huge Dolphins fan. He just loves the guy to death.
He's awesome.
He's awesome. He's creative. He's funny. You were telling me his childhood friend is the stand-up comic Dan Soder. Right?
Yeah, they're best friends from childhood, Dan Soder. Yeah, so, he's great.
So my bro is like eating up every press conference saying that McDaniel's intentionally distracting the media, keeping the pressure off the players.
Who? What's up, man?
Mike Jones, let's go. What's up?
Yes. Yes.
That McDaniel's just incredibly entertaining. But there's this thing that happened yesterday and today in Cincinnati, if people don't know. Kids have been lining up outside the stadium shooting cell phone footage of the Dolphins practicing and putting it out there. And like Barstool Cincinnati and others are putting it out there. And McDaniel got wind of it. So today he added a 12th player to every offensive set that they did. Just, and the team knew that the 12th player was just a dummy and a decoy, whether it's an extra target or whatever. But he said, look, if they're going to film everything, I'll just show them something that's confusing so they waste their time. If they bother the opposition, if they bother to dissect, they'd be looking at a 12-person play with everything that he did today. I think that's brilliant and hilarious.
Wow. I saw the first part of that story that the footage had leaked. I missed that he trolled the troll. Yes. and put a 12th man.
Put a 12th man there. I mean, not that the Bengals are going to, like, waste their time doing their cheap version of Spygate that got placed in their lap, but just in case they wanted to try, he's throwing them off today.
I don't know, man. Like, because of what we were talking about, because of the razor-thin edge between the best team and the worst team in the NFL, I mean, Josh McDaniels got in trouble when he was with the Broncos for spying on a Niners team that was led by Troy Smith. Like, you know what I mean? Like these guys cheat.
They're
like,
nuts.
It's a ruthless league, week to week to week. So when I saw that come out, I was like, oh, there's another edge for Cincy. But the biggest reason I thought that Cincy was just the right side of this is I thought that they had some bad luck earlier in the year. They're at home. Weird things happen on Thursday. And I think that Miami, I like McDaniel, I like their talent, I like what they did in the offseason, but I watched a ton of that Ravens game 2 weeks ago, and I watched a decent amount of that Bills game last week, and in both games, I didn't think they were the better team on the field. Like, Baltimore blew that game.
Yeah, they did.
With blown coverages and guys just running right past them, and they're like, we won't cover Tyreek Hill. And then last week, as you mentioned, the Bills ran 90 offensive plays. And they somehow lost the game, even though they outgained him by a couple hundred yards of total offense. And Miami was in the humidity in South Florida for on their defense on the field for 90 plays, then on a short week, then whatever distraction comes from being worried about your home and your family and your kids and all of that with the hurricane. And you've got to be in Cincinnati, and the Bengals need it to, hey, if we beat an undefeated team in the AFC, we're right back in this thing as the team that won the AFC last year. Like, I just think it's an awful spot for the Dolphins tonight.
I agree.
But a great game. I mean, it's a fascinating game for sure.
It should be a really fun watch. And if there's offensive explosion on a Thursday night, that would be some bonus fun. I just love the Dolphins sent a letter to Barstool saying you got to pull these clips off the net, and then McDaniel going next level with the 12th guy. So,
that's fantastic.
So we'll see. I kind of hope that they're for real. Just for my big bro, I'd like him to be happy.
Yeah, and by the way, I do think that they're going to be feisty this year. I don't think that they're the one seed or the favorites in the AFC East. Like, I think if they play Buffalo 10 times, they probably lose 7 of them.
We always seem to have these touchstones for what the Bears are not doing in the NFL. It comes up conversationally every year, right?
Yeah.
And I know that they're different career arcs and an extra year in the league. But the Dolphins equipping Tua and saying, here you go, with weaponry gets brought up a lot in the face of Justin Fields not being equipped.
It's next year. The Dolphins were able to trade 5 draft picks for Tyreek Hill, and I mean Jaylen Waddle, who's also questionable for tonight's game. I mean Jaylen Waddle's better than any pass catcher that the Bears have on their roster. So you know they paid a tackle. They traded for a receiver, and they already had a really good receiver. So they made a huge investment in their offense this year.
And if anybody's watching tonight, let it inform the conversation as we talk about this, because we might get to the end of this year, right, Danny, and be like, all right, time to equip Justin Fields and give him another shot. It worked for Miami and Tua. You know, like that could come up a lot. And check out what kind of quarterback Tua is. He's a very short pass, accurate guy. And it's a different kind of model. I mean, he threw deep sometimes at Alabama, and he will throw deep sometimes here and utilize the speed. But he's a different kind of quarterback and a different kind of short target precision guy. That's been the book on him anyway, and that's what McDaniel's trying to utilize here. But I'll be interested to watch a full game tonight and see, is he throwing guys open? Is he throwing it early? Is he doing some of the stuff that we don't think Justin does enough? How is he using the added weapons? Those kind of things to inform our conversation.
I want to hear from – we're going to hear from Luke Getsy right now, but, like, I think until proven otherwise, every quarterback that's starting in the NFL, we have to have an assumption that he's ahead of where Justin Fields is right now.
As a pocket passer.
Yeah, just in general. Cooper Rush looks more comfortable. Jacoby Brissett looks more comfortable. Tua looks more comfortable. And it's part of its years in the league and guys around them. And, you know, you can use all of the qualifiers that exist why all of these situations are not created equal. But, like, Bears-Giants, Daniel Jones is ahead of where Justin Fields is right now.
Yeah, but
it's his fourth year.
That's the thing. Wouldn't you rather be the Bears, like, worried about Justin Fields in year 2 than the Giants worried about Daniel Jones in year 4?
Oh, yeah. Daniel Jones is a zero, right? There's no way that he's the QB of the future. They just kind of got trapped into him, and they're going to move on. Yeah, I absolutely would rather have Justin Fields than Daniel Jones. He's a more valuable asset. But for the game on Sunday, that's what I was talking about. Like, for a game being played this week, until proven otherwise, Justin Fields is arguably the worst quarterback option in the NFL. And that includes Mitch, by the way, who's just been in the league an extra year. He can change that on a moment's notice if he just looks comfortable. He's got way more talent than a ton of these guys. But through 3 games, he doesn't have 300 yards passing. He's been the worst quarterback in the NFL statistically. Like, factually, he is the worst quarterback in the league. But here's what Luke Getsy had to say about basically how's it been going, how it's going to go forward with Justin Fields.
So after Justin threw that second touchdown, NFL Films kind of captured you and Trevor talking to him on the sidelines, instilling some confidence in him, saying, "We still trust you." How do you read his body language in those moments to know that he is receptive to that or maybe needs that kind of a pep talk?
You know, I think it was just more about, you know, just the moment in the sense of, like, hey, this is an opportunity to learn from this moment, you know, why that happened, the way that it happened, and how we can improve from it. That's all. We keep it real. We talk about what happened. Hey, this is why that happened. This is how we can avoid it so it doesn't happen again. And like, he's in that moment, right? He's basically a rookie, right, in still, and he's going through these experiences for the first time, and to then just think I made a really bad decision and then not really know why. I think it's important to make sure you're explaining to them, you know, why things happen. And so I think that's just, you know, hopefully that's how we're all coaching across the board here, and that's just a learning moment that we want to take advantage of.
On the first interception he had to Komet, he said that the ball came out of his hand a little weird, and watching that back, just his mechanics, he looked like his body almost was off. Is that the proper assessment, and is that footwork, or is that...
So what happened on that one, sorry to cut you off, I didn't mean to do that, he actually used phenomenal footwork because it happened much faster than we anticipated. The nickel ran outside of Cole so fast because of the bubble that was coming to him, that Cole just popped. And so he actually did a great job of shutting his feet down. But it was, you know, just a little bit mechanically when he went to throw it, like you said. He got a little bit long with his delivery, long with his stride. And so whenever it came out of his hand, you could tell it just came out funny because it was actually a brilliant play by him. I mean, how he handled it and his decision-making, all that was great. Like you said, he just missed the throw. And so those ones, you know, that'll happen every once in a while. Again, we can tighten up mechanically what we can do with him, but how he handled that play, he actually handled it really well. We just got to make the throw.
When you say that Justin is like a rookie, basically, is he still having to earn your trust for you to be able to really open up the passing game?
Oh, no, not at all. That open up the passing game, we do whatever we have to do to win games. So we've opened up the passing game. It's not like we haven't called pass plays that we've been intimidated to call a play by any means. We're calling the game the way we feel is best to attack with our matchups. So it doesn't just, it's not, you know, the perspective is that everything is just because it's through Justin, but we have 10 other guys that we have to account for too. So, you know, sometimes we aren't able to go five wide and spread people out because of, you know, matchups that we have to deal with. So that goes into a lot of things. So as we go through the games, we just got to find our way to take advantage of the matchups that we feel really good about and kind of stay away from those matchups that maybe we don't feel so good about.
Justin's 29-yard scramble on the first drive. Yeah. He kind of explained to us yesterday that he hung on Darnell for a little while, and then by the time he came off him, his feet weren't really synced up to go elsewhere. Before you heard that explanation, what was your sort of assessment of that play? And then when you hear that, what is kind of your feedback to him?
No, I mean, if the guy doesn't, you know, it could have been called for illegal contact on Mooney. The guy cut Mooney off, and they ran into each other. And so what you'd love to see him do is go all the way down to Pettis there on the check down. But that's who he is. Like, when he has that moment to be able to create space and time, we definitely don't want to take that away from him. And so I wouldn't say he necessarily hung on to it too long. It's just that, okay, once that collision happened, okay, find your check down. And then if that wasn't there, now it's time to get out. So maybe just taking that check down step and then go would be the improvement from that play.
Justin said yesterday he didn't feel like he was hesitating at all at any throws. Do you see any hesitation from him, maybe not pulling the trigger when guys are coming open?
No, I don't at all. I really don't. Like I said, that one, the first interception, that he actually had to speed up, and he did. He just missed the throw, honestly. So, you know, we got to just make it that we don't miss those throws. That's all.
So that's Luke Getsy on Justin Fields. Good stuff, Tanny. He's being kind, right, as a coach is supposed to defend his guy publicly, but saying it's like a rookie year for him when it isn't, like, every talk show in the city has had that debate. Mm-hmm. Should we treat this like Justin Fields is a rookie? Because he doesn't have a full year of starts, but it is his second year, and he did have a full offseason and all of that. So it's interesting to hear that they're looking at him like a rookie and willing to say that publicly.
I completely agree. It's jarring, and it I was fine with it. And then the follow-up question about it put him on the defensive, and I felt like he was a little defensive the whole rest of the way. Would love to have him give the honest reason why he thinks he's like a rookie. I assume that means system and some of the other stuff they're asking him to do.
Well, I mean, I think we know it, right? Because, I mean, we've talked about this all offseason, right?
Like,
he has less than a full year of starts, and it's his first year in this system. And the starts that he had last year were in a system that wasn't built for him. And they didn't adjust the system for him when he was put in it. So it wasn't like we could even give him, like, it. We all were watching it being like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Why aren't you doing the things that we think that he can do? And so, like, he started 9 games in a Matt Nagy offense, but it felt like they shouldn't count for 9 full games because a lot of it was like, you know, quick drop timing routes, get the ball out quick, the West Coast hybrid spread Andy Reid offense
with no protection.
With no protection, as opposed to what Justin Fields is able to do, which should be hang in the pocket and touchdown to checkdown mentality.
That was the reason for my Bears optimism and Nagylessness all off season. And here we go, and here's a more simple and intuitive offense. So, yeah, it retraces some of the other conversations that we've had, because here we are now, and he does have a system that does him favors. He does have Max Protect and Chip help, and he does have a more intuitive quarterback coach slash offensive coordinator, seemingly, and he's still real bad. So we're trying to figure out what is learning and what is not. Another thing in there, when he says that he sees no hesitation there at the end, he says that he doesn't see that at all. It was challenged directly. You don't see Justin holding it too long or hesitating? He says no. Every single person we've talked to, I mean, there's our eyes, there's certainly my eyes, but there's every analyst that we've talked to has talked about him holding onto it too long and then having to make a decision using his feet for better or for worse, or taking a sack or all of that. He says none of that. Is that just trying to pump his guy up publicly? Because it's hard for me to believe that he thinks that in his heart of hearts.
And I'll pull it up during the break, but it's also not backed up by the numbers.
Right, so it's the longest amount of time before a throw for any quarterback in the league. That was the stat before game three.
It's not after the third game. I don't think he had enough pass attempts. You know, but it's low. You know, he's near the bottom in average time to throw. And it's weird because that stat is not great as a solo indicator.
Yeah.
Because some guys who take a while, it's like, oh, we have a ton of protection, and you know, I'm also average of 10 air yards down the field and yards per completion, and and the guy's got 350 yards of offense. You know what I mean? Like, and you're throwing the ball down the field. That's obviously not what we're watching here. And so when you're taking sacks and then throwing the ball away and all that stuff, it's like, oh, you're holding the ball too long. So, yeah, that strikes me as a coach that is being kind to his
player. Will
say,
I was told yesterday in song form, which is the best way to tell anybody anything.
Agreed.
In my right, it just gets the message across.
Yeah, that's how I learn.
Yeah, be patient. Need patience. Justin will figure it out, I was told. Please be patient. And this year is about that.
Be patient.
That is a lot like how it sounded in song form when I was told to do it. And I need to listen to the song and be a little more positive, a little more patient with our guy, because Justin Fields Forever is not an album that's going to end well. And I want it to end well. So I'm going to hope traffic with myself, and I'm going to believe in music, Danny. I'm going to believe
Justin
in the power.
Justin Fields.
Whatever.
Yeah. It's feeling a lot more like whatever than forever right now.
Screw you,
Danny. Yeah, listen, man, we're going to do some version of this every week. The push and pull of being honest with what we've seen, right? What he's put on tape versus what he has to work with and how early we are in the whole evolution of it. And the reality of there's 14 more of these things.
Yeah.
So he has more games going forward than he has games already started. We're not going to be able to say that much longer, right?
That remains true, yeah.
Because it's 9 games last year and 3 games this year, so that's 12, and there's 14 more this year. So we have one more week. This is actually the tipping point.
It's a good nugget. It's a good nugget out of you. Next week, we'll be at 13 and 13.
We'll be at 13 and 13 of like a minimum of 13 more starts, assuming health. And 13 starts completed. This is the last week where we get to say there's more in front of him than behind him, assuming he's healthy for the season, guaranteed. And maybe he gets next year. We just don't know that. But assuming health, guaranteed, he's got 14 more starts.
Boy, that's a big moment next week when we cross that Rubicon from having more starts ahead of him than behind him. Strikes me as a moment that deserves a song.
Rubicon. We're just at a convention together, enjoying all the things that Ruben enjoys.
Oh, okay.
Not Rubicon.
Picking up bats slowly.
Yeah, just slowly walking from home plate back to the dugout with your hood up and not even exposing your Odyssey softball T-shirt that I so kindly got for you.
I'm bothered. I'm deeply bothered as the week goes on by my son's bat boy performance. I really am.
He was so good last year.
I know.
He was such a good bat boy.
And it was good a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, too.
Yeah.
This was This was a lazy and entitled bat boy approach.
Something changed. He got comfortable. He got complacent.
He did.
I belong here. Nobody. Yeah. You're still earning it.
Is that what Liam Hendricks was talking about? What, every time he brought up the complacency?
Oh,
he just
crikey.
I feel like Ruben rolled into the air. No, I can't do it. Ruben rolled into the air, totally complacent, thinking nobody was going to take his bat boy job. He was right about that.
I actually have something on Monday. Let's do how many hours is that? 72-hour tease.
That's more.
Something that I have started doing that involves Liam Hendricks.
Okay.
Something that you are doing.
Is it putting pictures of him all over your bedroom wall?
No.
Is that what it is? That,
those are already up there.
That's stupid. Whoever thought that was a great idea is an idiot.
Nope.
Are you getting tarot card readings?
I said we're going to wait till Monday.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Nope. I'm not going to let you guys guess.
He's manifesting. He's going to try and get some aggressive
help. We've been manifesting all year.
It hasn't worked out well.
No. All he has to show for this manifestation is a tattoo.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
It's a tough year for manifesting. It really is.
It is. Looking forward to the 72-hour tease about Channing and Liam Hendricks being paid off on a Horizon Therapeutics Paris Monday. But coming up next, this felt good. It felt like time travel to hear Matt Bowen on the station again, and he was insightful, as always, about the Bears, and dare I say, a reason for optimism, which this fan base could use, coming up on The Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
It's been a long 4 hours.
Afternoons on The Score.
What's going on, Matt?
Hey, guys, great to be back. I'm excited to be back. You know I love being with you guys, and I was talking with my wife last night when I first started doing hits in The Score. I mean, shoot, I was living... We were still live in the city, 4100 block of North Bell, south, you know, right south of Wells Park there. And just how excited I was to be on originally to talk about, I mean, talk about the Chicago Bears on radio. It was awesome to be back now. Really excited.
It was cool to hear Matt Bowen with Bernstein and Holmes. That's a great get for those guys. It's going to be Thursdays at noon. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And Bowen, I think Bowen is among the best, if not the best, going at doing what he does, at breaking stuff down and the way that he talks about it and how comfortable he is. Danny, I remember when the RPOs and the quarterback going out wide was to run when Russell Wilson was taking over the league with all that stuff, you know,
yeah.
The zone read. Bowen explained it to all of us, including me, in ways that made me understand what was happening, how the defensive end gets eliminated because they put him in a position of having to decide. And then his decision in and of itself means that you don't need to use a blocker on him because you're reading that decision and how that makes the math in the offense's favor. It was like a huge light bulb moment for me. And then watching the league defend it and learn to defend it. He's made a lot of us smarter in football ways throughout the years.
Yeah, he's very, very good at it. It's funny you mentioned the RPO thing. I thought that Greg Olsen was great on that in the game that he called this past weekend. I still feel like it's not analyzed correctly in the moment often enough. Like, after the fact or at halftime.
Totally agree.
You know, or like after a play's been successful, but when they say, like, or when they show that, like, one side of the offensive line is run blocking and one side is pass blocking, and if the guy, especially when the quarterback keeps it and throws the ball, they don't often point out that there was a decision made before the decision to pass, like a post-snap decision that was made. And I know that Greg Olsen was just on it routinely over the weekend. And it's a small thing, but so many teams run it that, and by the way, on Fields, we're talking about his processing. Like, that's a post-snap read that you have to make quickly. And it just doesn't feel like he's even close to being there yet.
No, you're right, because there's a lot of decisions that go on. The way it's discussed and analyzed remains. I mean, there were times when we have people on, they're like, well, you know, with the RPOs. And I'm like, no, that was just a zone read. It wasn't an RPO.
Right.
It was just a zone read. You know, so, like, it's tough.
It's hard. It's not the easiest thing in the world to diagnose. And
correct.
But so I really did appreciate Greg Olsen I forget the game it was. I'm blanking on it right now. But he just did a good job routinely with the camera shot behind the line of scrimmage.
Was it Green Bay and the Bucks? It was the Fox Lade game, right?
Yeah, right. Rodgers. Yeah, because yep.
Guys, actually, if you go on McAfee's show, Rodgers did a really good breakdown on that first touchdown where he talks about, like, you know, zone reads and how it was actually a Bears origin story to when they were playing the Bears, like in 06, 07, they started doing that up in Green Bay in, like, the Favre years and how he's evolved over time. It's really good watch. I know some of that McAfee stuff is kind of out there, but this is really good football stuff if you're more interested in that stuff. So.
That's all excellent.
Right.
Thank you.
I will check it out. Yeah, you're right. It was Bucks Packers. So Matt Bowen was on today, and both these things that we're going to play you, I think, will make you feel pretty good about the Bears. We were talking offense before, so let's stick with it here. Here's Matt Bowen talking about Luke Getsy's scheme.
I think, you know, a broad view, if you're just looking down on the Bears offense right now, and look, if you want to talk about scheme, I don't think they're limited by scheme in the pass game. I think they're limited right now by volume and how many pass attempts they have in terms of being a pro passing offense that can dictate the tempo or flow of a football game. They're not doing that right now. But in terms of the scheme and what's there, there are throws to be made in the tape. We have to address that, because you go back to the Green Bay game, look this past Sunday and the game against Houston. There are times, and the best way I can say this, you know, that is understandable, where Justin has to take the throws that are available, because every top quarterback does that, whether it's an under, a hitch route, a seam you can fit between zone defenders. The play is designed to go there. You can take those throws if they're there. And also there's opportunities based on the tape where more third level throws, where I think he has opportunities to cut it loose as a thrower. Now, on top of that, there are times when he has to make those throws possible. And you look, there has been pressure in the pocket. We understand that. There's going to be pressure behind this offensive line at times. I think everyone understands that. But looking at the tape again, are there situations where he can climb and slide, and I use the term, to reset his throwing window? When you feel edge pressure to move up, will you feel interior pressure to slide, reset, keep your eye level down the field, and drive the football? Because I do see those situations on the tape. Last week in the game where Fields had, I think it was a 20-plus yard scramble run, and everyone saw the play on TV, and obviously when you're watching on TV, you can't really see down the field. So you turn on the tape and look at it. It's a 3rd and 9 situation against Houston. You're playing against Lovie Smith. So we all understand 3rd and 7 to 10, against Lovie Smith, what's the tendency? Cover 2, right? That's what you're expecting. That's what the offense is scheming for. That's what the quarterback is preparing for. At the snap of the football, they rotate. I call it late rotation. The safety spins down. So now you go from 2 high to single high. You're playing a robber coverage. You have to see the safety rotation and then look to the field side of the formation. They run what I call a smash concept. That's when the number 1 outside receiver runs a 5-yard in route. And then number 2 receiver runs a corner route, or what I call a 7 route.
Yep, smash 7, right?
Yeah, that's it, Dan. And the corner route's there. Okay, the corner route is there. But I think Justin comes off it too quickly, or he's reading to the opposite side of the formation and pulls the ball down. And when you see sometimes with quarterbacks who have elite physical traits, because that's what Justin Fields has, is sometimes those traits or those tools play to their detriment at times. Where instead of taking a couple extra seconds, or instead of climbing in the pocket, they know because of the physical profile they have, they can go make a play outside of structure. And that's great. You want them to do that. You want a quarterback like Justin Fields. When things go south, incredibly south, when they do happen in football games, you want him to add that playmaking element to your offense. And we've seen him do that now, going back to last season and early in this season in certain situations. But you only want to do that when necessary. And for him to progress as a quarterback, you want to have or limit that unnecessary movement outside the pocket, because you want him to develop as a pocket thrower to play within the structure of the scheme and hit the defined throws, because they are there in the tape.
Thought that was good, just in terms of, I know it's football-y and jargony or whatever, but his point is guys are open and it's working. So now it's about executing.
Yeah, and climbing the pocket as opposed to scrambling and running. Scrambling to climb the pocket and extend the play.
And then given his defensive background and what Ryan Poles did with second-round picks in Gordon and Brisker, thought it was worth hearing Matt Bowen's evaluation of the Bears' young secondary.
Well, I'll start with both players. I love the draft picks. I go back to April, and was a little surprised they went, you know, defense heavy at the top of the draft, maybe. But then you look at what they do from a defensive perspective, and Gordon and Brisker are ideal fits for what they want to do. Start with Brisker. Brisker's a top-down player. You saw that at Penn State. Yeah, can he carry in a quarter scheme and match number two vertical? Yes, he can do all that. But he is a top-down disruptor. He's someone that can fit in the run front. He can make plays in the football from the deep half. He can match up the tight ends. I think he's going to be a real high-level player in this system. And with Gordon, he gives you inside-outside flex. He can play inside like you're talking about, Lawrence. He can play outside the numbers. Another very disruptive player that can blitz. We saw that the other day when he got a hand in the football in the, you know, the one pressure scheme they ran against Houston, and he came off the edge and got a PBU. I think he's very active in coverage. I think he's competitive in coverage. The number one thing of both of these guys, they will tackle. They will tackle. And I know that's it sounds like we're talking Pop Warner football here, but look, if I'm coaching the secondary and you can't tackle, I'm not putting you on the field. It's simple as that. If you can't bring a physical element to my secondary, don't even bother asking me to get in the field. It's going to be no. No, show me you can tackle first. And both those guys can do it. Now, playing the slot in today's NFL is, you know, you have to have, I use the term multidimensional traits, because you have to cover. You have to play in a short area. You have to be able to be a man and a zone coverage corner. You have to have backfield vision to read inside to the quarterback to close windows as a zone defender. You have to blitz, and you have to tackle in space. It's a lot of responsibilities. And look, we've seen with Gordon, you know, the Sunday night game against Green Bay is a great example. He made the play in the high red zone, the outside vertical. It was cover two. He had no threat underneath. He flipped his hips, got underneath the vertical, and made a play against Aaron Rodgers. It's big-time football, guys. It's big-time football for a rookie to do that. Now, did he have some moments that are going to be correct? Well, of course he did. Did Brisker have some moments in the game? Sure. There was explosive runs with both of them, took negative angles to the football. But here's the thing. I can coach that. I can go in the meeting room and coach that. We can go back and walk through it during practice. We can simulate the exact same plan. I can teach that stuff. What I can't teach is the urgency and the physicality. I cannot teach that stuff. And you guys both have it. So I want you in my defensive back room.
Need to rep.
It's good stuff, man. It's good stuff. That's going to be good radio with Dan and Lawrence and Matt Bowen on Thursdays at noon.
Is this the part of the show, Danny, where we get to the White Sox big 2-0 win against the Twins, where they showed a little hint of pride, a little whiff of pride?
6:05.
I love Lucas Giolito saying, we want to finish at 500. Okay, good luck.
I'm sure you do. That's adorable.
Congratulations.
That was your goal, right?
Yeah.
We got to finish at 500.
They've been doing it all year.
Yeah. That's true. You watching this game tonight? You tuning into Amazon Prime?
Absolutely. Locked and loaded. And not going to be on Twitter, so I don't have to worry about real-time matchups with
weird
the
spoilers tech and all that stuff.
Exactly.
How's Tua's back going to hold up, you think?
Well,
it's got a shaky back, I heard.
That's what they're claiming.
It locked up.
Yeah.
A week back, huh?
Yeah.
How long has he had that?
About a week.
week ahead?
You guys are proud of yourself.
Danny and I are a riot.
Thanks for clarifying. Sometimes I forget.
Oh, man. Well, I guess we'll have to do this heavy lift of about an hour tomorrow. You guys think we're up for it?
Parkins versus Parkins versus Spiegel versus Spiegel tomorrow. We'll get it in after the Cub game.
Trying tomorrow. To get that in after the Cub game. Hoping to talk to Pat Manley tomorrow after the Cub game.
Dan
as well.
Wiederer tomorrow instead of Pat Manley.
Oh, Dan Wiederer tomorrow instead of Pat Manley is what I meant to say. I apologize. Thank you.
It's on the rundown.
No, I don't think it is.
I know I was going to say I don't believe
that.
No, because
I was. By the way, right. For people who are wondering.
Pat, no one's wondering.
No, about Pat's safety.
Oh, about the rundown.
No, about Pat's safety. Pat's fine. He and his wife and kid are fine. Oh. They are headed back to their place in Florida right now.
That
conversation was happening before the show, so we didn't talk about it today.
Thank you for helping. That's redirecting the priorities and deflecting. That was
Pat's safety? Yeah, sorry about that.
Come on, we got a TV star coming up here. We got to get out of here.
All right, seriously. There's Connor and Shane and Tanny and Spiegs. I'm Danny.
Cody
We're
Parkins
and Spiegel. Oh, Cody Decker?
Who else would it be?
Ann Heron's on Fox 32. He's a good friend of Manny Does TV.
Gabe Ramirez does Fox stuff, too.
Man, Cody Decker, a national TV star.
Big
down the line with Cody Decker coming up next on The Score.
That's exactly what you didn't want to have happen today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.